Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Romance Bookmark with Renee Bernard. And tonight I have Anna Brentwood on the show. And I am going to admit, I don't know that we've met her. I don't know you very well. So this feels kind of fun to have, you know, gotten you onto the program because I feel like I get a chance to meet you.
Welcome. I know. Well, I was very intrigued. I heard of you through Delilah Marvell, who's a dear friend of mine and a writer in this area locally where I live in Oregon.
Yeah. Oh, isn't she wonderful? I love Delilah.
Yeah, I love her. Yeah,
she's
started
a firecracker.
Out.
Yeah.
Way back when, you know, all of us. You know how you always start out writing with other people and then everybody's careers take off at different points. And, she's really somebody that, you know, I've known pretty much since I moved here to Oregon.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's always interesting to me how it does happen sometimes in circles where there'll be a critique group or a cluster. And then you will see people from that group sort of launch out and go like a little nest or something. It's like, oh, that's kind of neat. Do you think talent just magically gets attracted, or do you think it rubs off, or what happens?
Well, I mean, with my experience, I came to Oregon to, you know, have a career writing, and I wasn't a joiner, and I figured I was going to do this project, and then I was going to plug myself in. And I actually read a romance novel by a woman named Linda Needham, and she actually lived in the same town, North Plains, where I live. So I emailed her and said, you're never going to believe it, and I kind of wrote a funny little thing. And she wrote me back. And, of course, at that point, I hadn't known a real live author. You know, so when she wrote me back and said, we should get together for lunch, I was like a groupie, you know, so excited, you know, that I was going to meet a romance author. And she looked so glamorous, like we all do on our pictures. And we met at the neighborhood gas station, and her car was filled with McDonald's bags, and she looked like a normal, you know, harried, you know, person, and was so down to earth that I immediately loved her, and it was like I was totally comfortable after that. And she said, you've got to go. Have you ever gone to Romance Writers of America? Have you joined? And I said, no. I said, because my first book was a women's fiction. It wasn't really romance, even though it has romance. And she took me as a guest, and basically that's when I met Delilah and all the other people in the area that, you know, had a passion for writing. So it kind of started back then. But really, over the years, the group, mostly everybody that stuck with the group has been published and has had all different levels of success. So I really think it's a matter of persistence, you know, and with other people that, you know, that have
Do you think that persists, the idea that a romance writer has a certain look? Like, I remember back in the day where there was pressure to have a certain, you know, look. It was almost like being an Avon lady or in Mary Kay. Like, you had to have a certain, or you had to try. You had to try. But
we're all just careers people. That everybody's picture looks like a glamour portrait compared to what they really look like. And a lot of our author friends put in pictures from 15 years ago, or they, you know, or they have them, you know, specially. I mean, none of us look like our pictures.
No, usually. And I've seen some, like you're saying, where I'm sorry, but that's like 1980s hair. Like, you can tell, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, yeah, I don't really think you're going to get away with that for much longer.
I know, exactly. And when I first got my first author picture, I was like so worried because I wanted them to make me look, by the time I got published from when I started, I was older than I thought I'd be when I got published. And I said, you need to make me look like 25 years younger and 25 pounds thinner. Can you do that? And he's like, sure. And then I didn't like his pictures, and I came home like fretting about it. My son said, Mom, Steven Spielberg's special effects department wouldn't be able to please you.
Oh, I love that, though. You had a date in mind when it was going to happen. So you're like, okay, make it look like this happened like 25 years ago. Yeah, I think photographers probably get that all the time. Could you just, sure. I don't know, make me look not like me.
Exactly. Exactly. And the older you, you know, the funny thing is, you know, I never, some people are photogenic and other people are not. And I always was the type that looked better in person than in photos. And,
me too.
You know, so I'm not really photogenic. And I never liked my pictures even when I'm younger. But now that I'm, you know, older, I look back at my 20s and 30s and say, God, I looked fabulous. And I thought, didn't think that then. So it's always like later on you look at your pictures and realize, oh, I didn't look so bad after all.
We're always hard. Women are always harder on themselves. And, yeah, you finally look back and you're like, wow, I was awesome and had no idea it was awesome. But
yeah.
I don't know. But author photos, I'm the same way. I'm a talker. So every picture, my mouth is open. You know, when you're talking, it's not your best moment. It's like, oh, God,
why? And you always have a friend that likes to take pictures. And we used to have an Uncle Joey that took pictures at everybody's wedding and an event constantly. He was snapping a camera. And every picture, your tongue was out or your food was turning in your mouth. I mean, you know, now I'm really sensitive. Like with the advent of selfies and everybody with taking pictures, I'm like, I threaten everybody. If you post that without my approval, I'm going to kill you. You know, I have a certain look that I only want people to. I don't want people to see me.
You're like, I have an image
ago,
to protect here,
me when
here,
I was
people.
Young and glamorous, unless I censor the picture.
You have an image. You have an image to protect, madam. Yes, you
That's
do.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm just gonna say, I love that you're writing in the Roaring Twenties. These books that are set, and I just got into an intense discussion with somebody about the need for romances outside of the 19th century and to start pushing up. And I thought, well, we're doing World War II, or I've seen, you know, more of that.
Right.
But it's like there's just a lot of eras that just got glossed right over.
Well, you know,
and
when
I
took it out like 18, 19 years ago, you know, the historical was defined as before, like, the 1800s or whatever. So
it was to 1899. Like, it was. You're right. It was, like, in stone that it could
be. Yeah, it was in stone. And even when I was starting out in the first few, when I did my first manuscript, everybody, you know, this isn't really historical. This is the 1920s. Well, of course it's historical. But, of course, you know, then everything was very strict. So I was kind of writing out of the box then, but this was a book that kind of I had to write anyway, no matter what. So, because this book, you know, was something that I was very passionate about for years before I even had the opportunity to write it.
Yeah, those are the best books, though. And other authors disagree, and I've been on panels with them, bless their hearts, where they still feel very, very firmly about those rules, and sometimes you just have to follow your muse down whatever corridor that is, and I think it's an awesome choice. I'm in your corner. I think it's great.
Thank you. Well, it did take me like 15 years to, you know, to get to the point where with this book, you know, which I wrote it and rewrote it and wrote other books in between, but when I finally published this, it was right when The Great Gatsby was popular and the year before Chicago. So it was almost like timing is weird, you know. It was like perfect time because history is cyclic and certain eras become popular like on a cycle.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
and it was right around the time. I mean, I was able to time my first book signing into a premiere for the Great Gatsby movie. Where
I saw that and I thought that was incredible. And I always like to remind people, it's a journey, not a race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes, exactly, it doesn't matter if it's years in the making. When it happens, it's exactly when it's supposed to happen.
Exactly.
So,
I really believe that. It's really been the case with me. And, you know, even though, you know, you hear, well, you need to write this and this is pop. I mean, since I've been in this business now, there's always, you know, paranormal was really popular and then everybody was writing vampire stories and, you know.
You can't chase it.
People that want to
you're
write
always the last one on the bus. And that's what I tell people. It's like when you're chasing a trend, you are the last one on that bus. And trust me, the party's over.
Yeah, usually that's the case. So it depends on, you know, the way you want to craft your career. There's a lot of people mm-hmm. that are very prolific and can write all different things, you know, really fast. With me,
yeah.
you know, each book becomes like I'm a method actor, and I become like totally invested in my story and my era and everything else. So, you know, I kind of look at Diana Gabaldon as like somebody that really was an inspiration to me early on
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
she wrote such big books, and they took years before she really started to become popular. And and each book of hers takes 3 to 4 years. Not that I'm her, I wish, but you know. But basically, you know, I feel like my books have to take as long as they take. Usually, at least a year now or two.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Because I really do. I mean, I love immersing myself in the research and the history. You know, and really, You know, that's really important to me when I write, that I put genuine history and events and tie as much to reality as I can.
Oh, I love that. I love that. No, you have to be true to yourself and to your, I just think that's so important. And I do, there are some concerns. Some, a very, very few are prolific and can apparently just spit them out in multiple genres. I don't know about multiple genres, but they can really just go, 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 go. That's great. But I think that you can potentially, if someone's any less than those few, I can count on my fingers, I think something can get lost with speed. A lot can get lost with speed. So I appreciate
a
well-written
book.
Yeah,
and I feel that we all get to the point where we start to have pressure on us for that once you get published. I mean, you know, I'm constantly being asked, when's your next book? When's your next book? And I feel guilty. You know, I don't want to be like George Martin in the Game of Thrones, that everybody's ready to kill him.
Same thing, that poor guy. Yeah.
But you know, yeah. I want every, you know, this series of books to me is really very important. I have other books on the line that I'm going to be
mm-hmm,
writing that
mm-hmm.
aren't going to be off this series, but you know, for this series, it's like I have to give it everything because I have to live the characters and live it and then be able to write it.
Yeah. Well, if you're method, like you said, if you're method acting and you're really immersing yourself in those persons, yeah, that's not something you can meter out. It will organically happen as it happens. So, I mean,
yes. And I mean, the thing is, my first book, The Songbird with Sapphire Eyes, of course, took me a really long time. And then, I didn't even know that I would have a second book off of it. It was because I was, you know, blessed to be asked to join Wintree Press, which is a wonderful authors cooperative here.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are very prolific, and I think I was the only one asked to join that only had one book out.
And
we had a meeting, and, you know, everybody was talking, this one's writing 8 books in a year, and this one's writing 12, and I'm thinking, oh, God. I was like cringing and trying to like hide in the back, thinking, you know, I definitely don't think I could do this. And I said to Maggie Lynch, who was the president, you know, I don't know if I'm like just a one book person. And she said, oh no, you. And meanwhile, I left there because we were going to work on an anthology, and it was just the story of Mermaid's Treasure. Amazingly, which is a prequel now to The Songbird with Sapphire Eyes, came to me, and I wrote it with 4 months. So it was like I didn't even know I had it in me to write it.
Oh my gosh.
I'm working on the sequel, which, you know, I didn't even know I was originally going to kill off the character.
You didn't
I'm
even
writing
know
it.
You were going to do it. Well,
yeah.
I don't care. I say it's quality, not quantity. So I think it's awesome. And the music is the word. But I can't believe it. We're like practically out of time.
Okay, well, that's very interesting to talk to. We're talking.
It
about
was fantastic.
Probably both love.
And don't let me forget. Okay, so everybody, it's www.annabrentwood.com, and please go out and pick up The Songbird with Sapphire Eyes. I know you're going to be a fan. I'm a fan, and then you too can be one of those people that tries not to pester her about when Anthony's Angel is going to come out. Just saying. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much
for
doing this, Anna.
True.
It was so much fun to talk to you. It really was.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to meet you. I'm going to head your direction and come up there and meet you. All right, everybody, good night. And join us next week for more of the Romance Bookmark. Good night, everyone.
Good night.